The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 4th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. Wednesdays are a lot of fun around here as we will have a couple of guests join us on the show today. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is with us in hour number one. He'll join us in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get a recap on Georgia's dominating win over Clemson in week one and really reminding everybody why they are the number one team in college football. So that's coming up in about 30 minutes. And then it is Wednesday and it's Double D Wednesdays. Daryl Dapperich will join us coming up in hour number two. We'll get his thoughts from week one of college football for Auburn, and we'll flip the page into week two. And also need to go over Auburn men's basketball's true non-conference schedule. That was announced today. It is finalized. We've known a lot of the big names, but a couple of the filler games are in there as well. And so all of that coming up in hour number two with Daryl Dapperich. It feels unbelievable outside. I walked out of my front door this morning, and I almost went back inside to grab a pullover. I didn't, but almost did, because it felt like fall. And that's not really a word we get down here a whole lot, but my goodness, it's a beautiful day outside here in Auburn, Alabama. Can't say that's going to be the case over the next couple of days, though. Tomorrow appears to be a little overcast. Friday is going to be gross. Just be ready for that. Friday is going to be nasty around Auburn and Opelika. They're calling for half an inch of rain. They're going to say heavy periods of rain all day long. Saturday looks to be okay. Maybe some rain in the morning, but hopefully clearing up by the time Auburn kicks off against Cal. And good thing about Wednesdays around here, that's when we flip the page, right? We flip the page to the next week for college football, for Auburn, for all of the sport. And we're excited to do that here today. And joined in the studio, we told you it's going to be a kind of a hit or miss on whether this guy's here or not, because you just never know what he's going to be up to. But Christian Griffin's with us in the studio once again, voice of Lee Scott. He was up here working a little bit today because your schedule got thrown off this afternoon, did it not?
It did. It got changed a little bit for everybody involved in Lee Scott and Childersburg. The game is now tomorrow evening. It'll still be 6:30 pregame kickoff at 7, but as you mentioned, the rain that's coming in, it looks to be gross. Hopefully it stays away for Saturday. It's most likely looking like a Thursday night all day Friday affair with all of the rain, but that will be our game getting pushed up to tomorrow evening with Lee Scott and Childersburg. But still, AU 100 pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7. And regarding coming on the show, you just get here in the morning, and I have my sleeping bag begging to just get a spot inside, and you just keep on willingly bringing me along. And until we get the word from the big boss that it's no more, I'll just keep showing up, right?
Pretty much. Until you say something you're not supposed to, we're good to go. And so, yes, keep that in mind. We will be sharing that as much as we can across all of our shows, across our social media, everything like that. Lee Scott Academy football, their game got moved from Friday to tomorrow on Thursday. Still on the road at Childersburg. Believe that's probably the biggest reason is the field condition there at Childersburg and just not being able to hold a bunch of rain, and don't want to be playing on a field with a bunch of rain. And so that is moved to tomorrow. Auburn and Opelika, Yeah, we're still playing Friday. We're on. I talked to Auburn High today, and it ain't going anywhere. We're playing Friday night, rain or shine. And so
it's the luxury of turf, right?
Yeah. Thankfully, there's good turf there, and the Duck has a really good drainage system. So thankfully, I guess, we're playing on Friday. It's going to be nasty, but we're going to be out there regardless. You can catch that broadcast on Wings 94.3. Phone lines are open today. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We flip the page to week two of college football, and if you were not impressed with the games in week one, you'll probably be impressed with the games in week two. And Christian, it starts with a top 10 matchup, big noon kickoff on Fox Saturday morning, 11 a.m. Number 3 Texas out of the SEC heads to the Big House to take on Michigan, who is still ranked in the top 10.
They are, and Michigan struggled for about 2.5, if not 3 full quarters against Fresno State. They ended up beating them 30-10, so the score did nothing to look as if Michigan struggled. But it was a 3-point game, and Michigan had 17 points in the fourth quarter. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Yeah, 17 points in the fourth quarter to win 30-10. It's going to be the first big road test for Sark and Quinn Ewers and that whole Texas group coming in. As you mentioned, still feels a little bit weird to say members of the SEC. We'll get there eventually, week by week. It'll feel more comfortable. But what a big-time matchup in a week two game where it feels like usually that's the majority of cupcake games, I guess you could say, because teams play that big week one game like Georgia and Clemson, and then week two you get your home opener. But instead, Michigan and Texas said, all right, let's get it on.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I think this is going to be a really, really fun game. Texas currently favored by 7.5 points in this game.
I mean, the first time since, I believe it was November of 2021, that Michigan is a home underdog.
Okay, I thought it was longer than that, but it's been a long time since Michigan, has been a home underdog there at the Big House. And that's one of my sports bucket list places is the Big House. I've never been. I've never had a chance to go. I would really, really like to go at some point. It's a really good atmosphere. But as crazy as this sounds, and this may be a hot take, I almost put it up there with Texas A&M and even Bryant Denny, where there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of people in those stadiums. But when I think of the craziest, most advantageous home atmospheres in college football, I put the Big House and Kyle Field and Bryant Denny all in the same category of, yeah, they're good, but I don't put them in the best in the country.
It's one of those stadiums that, because every home stadium can be great, but there's a big word there, and that's it can be. It's one of those stadiums that relies heavily on the talent of the football team playing within the stadium. I feel like that's why that goes down to that second tier of stadiums, whether it's Kyle Field or whether it's Bryant Denny or Ann Arbor. If the team is 5-7, it's going to sound a lot different than if a team is 11-1 or 11-0 playing Ohio State in the last week of the year.
Yeah, I think it depends on who's in there too, right? The opponent and things like that. And you know, the Big House, the field is down in a hole.
Yeah.
Like it feeds down into it. And I think that has something to do with it. I don't know. It's one of the staples of college football. There's no doubt about it. It's one of these staples. But I've never watched a game there. Yeah, some of the, you know, the big games of the Michigan-Ohio States, like, they get loud and they get crazy, but it's still going to be a tough test for Texas. There's no doubt about it, but it's not an unwinnable game. I don't, especially with what we saw week one from Texas and what we saw week one from Michigan, I think Texas, I think they should be the favorite. Now, being a more than a touchdown favorite on the road in a top 10 game, that's pretty wild to me.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, Texas did everything they wanted and more against Colorado State in week one. Ann Arbor, I believe, is one of the few stadiums in college football where the home team doesn't run out from the end zone. Don't they run out from like the 25-yard line, and that's where the flag, or that's where the go blue sign is that they hit?
I don't know
I'm
that
almost
for sure.
Positive, but
I'm not 100% on that. I'll take your word for it.
Might as well, right?
Sure, yeah.
Give me 15 seconds and we can confirm if you should take my word or not.
Well, Texas has the opportunity to really show out for the SEC. This was, of course, a game probably when it was scheduled. This was a Big 12, Big 10 game, but now it's an SEC Big 10 game, which I think, Christian, I think that carries even more weight. I think that is because you're talking about the two biggest conferences in college football, and you're also talking about two of the top, what, three programs in their own conference? I mean, you're talking heavy hitters right here. This is Georgia, Ohio State. This is Texas, Michigan. This is Alabama, Oregon. Like, that's the type of game that this is and the impact that it has. And man, Texas has a really good chance to represent the SEC big time for their first time.
It is. And just going back to what they do, they run out at the 50-yard line, which is pretty cool. I feel like it's a very different run out. So that's where they have their go blue, like the club supports you, they run and all go hit that little
banner. There's some basketball teams that do that, don't they?
Yeah. But it gives a it's a weird, especially because we haven't been there in person, but it's a weird feeling because you don't have the smoke where the team runs the entire length of the field. You run halfway and then you just run to your sideline. So it is a little bit different, but you talk about how big of a game it is. Imagine Texas, I mean, coming into the SEC where, again, you are expected to be already at the top of your position. But, hey, let's go to the home of the defending national champions and make a statement of a win before, as we mentioned, the gauntlet of the SEC that Texas is about to run into.
Yeah, and for them, though, they don't run into
they
it
don't.
Until
it,
middle of October when they play against Oklahoma, which is a neutral site game, and then they get Georgia the next week. And so,
and then Vandy.
Oh, shoot,
Diego Pavia, baby.
Stop. If he's alive by the time he gets there. Michigan, I feel, and we'll move on from this game in just a second. Michigan, I feel, is a top 10 team because they are returning national champions. I think week one showed that they are not the team that they were, which nobody expected them to be, but it's the Uncle T-Bone factor of until you lose, we're going to respect you and give you the credit that you deserve, and I'm fine with that. I mean, I think they could get humbled this weekend against Texas and then maybe kind of forget about Michigan in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. It's one of those, it's almost like a player that has the position, somebody comes in and could possibly be better, but at least for the first couple weeks, they've proven themselves, that player that's been there for a couple years, he's going to get precedent over some other players, in this case, that being Michigan winning the national championship. And then, speaking of, have you seen the documentary on Connor Stallions?
I did. I watched it the other night.
What are your just quick thoughts on?
I mean, I think it's obvious. I think he was what he was, right?
Yeah.
He was doing exactly what we thought he was doing. They got away with it for a while. They caught him. He's going to deny it till the end of time. And look, Harbaugh will probably never coach college football again, but I don't think he cares.
I don't think he wants to coach college football again.
In my opinion, they did it. Other people probably do it. Others just haven't gotten caught. And I just don't care.
That was the biggest thing. It was a documentary that I think is worth watching, but definitely from the standpoint of you didn't get any sort of evidence or any sort of hard conclusion. It was kind of just it's over. But
right.
I think it did open the eyes of that total underworld of college football and how there is so much that goes on beneath the scenes, but beyond a Friday and Saturday or beyond a traditional game prep week. I think you see a lot more of it. And that's what you got the story. But definitely, if you're wanting some sort of closure on Stallions and what he does, definitely not going to get it.
No, that documentary is not going to give you what you're looking for. And at this point, I think now that the season has started, I think most people feel the same way.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It happened, and let's move on. Other games going on in week two of college football. We'll get to those when we come back. Maybe not as exciting as week one, but still really fascinating matchups, especially that involve SEC teams. We'll have that for you and more when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Terry, what's up, man? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, Jacob. Christian, how y'all doing today?
Doing good. Fantastic.
Wonderful. heard you guys talking a little bit about the weather. I kind of hope the weather, maybe you guys can enlighten me. We'll get out of here by Saturday so Auburn can throw the – that appears to be what they want to do because they've been so lacking there for so long. They want to throw the ball around because if it's raining, that's more of a, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type game.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair concern. And as of right now, it seems like the weather's supposed to move out by Saturday afternoon. Auburn kicking off at 2:30 Central Time, and so it's supposed to be gone by then. And even if it's still a little bit of a light drizzle, I think they'll still throw the ball. And here's the good thing, though, as I was talking yesterday, we understand and we know, right? We know that Auburn can run the ball and win football games. I think we're all very confident in that, which I know we haven't seen it. We're only one game in, but Christian and I were talking about that yesterday, where we know that if Auburn has to get in a pouring down rain, ground and pound game, they could beat Cal that way.
Right, and at some point this year, sooner than later, Jaquez Hunter's going to get 15, 20 carries. That's going to happen. So I don't care how many. Now, I know the passing game has been so bad for so long and certainly lacking, and that's certainly where Hugh Freeze's staff is concentrated on getting those great receivers we have, the freshmen and those transfers too. You know, that's what they want to show off because they were still throwing the ball when they were comfortably ahead the other night.
Yeah, they were. But let me ask you this. I mean, is it necessary for Jaquez Hunter to get 15, 20 yards given the passing game and given Damari Austin and given Jeremiah Cobb? I mean, is it necessary for him to get almost 20 carries in a game? I don't know if it is.
It will be necessary till Auburn proves they can throw the ball down the field with such success. They have to back off.
I think against good teams. Yes, I think against good teams. That's a good point.
Yeah, so that's what I think. Appreciate it, guys. You have a good day.
Thanks, Terry. You too, man. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Yeah, weather-wise, I mean, again, I think it's going to be okay Saturday. We'll just have to kind of – it's really just a waiting game at this point.
Yeah, it says it's 35% right now, but that is – the hourly only goes to 2 p.m. on Friday. And so, granted, we know what is coming on Friday. So I think that Saturday percentage is skewed a little bit towards – you know, what could be 1 or 2 a.m., but still shows up for Saturday afternoon.
We'll keep talking Auburn and Cal later in the program. Daryl Dapperts joins us coming up in hour number two. Thanks, Terry, for the call. We appreciate it, as always. Looking at other games around week two of college football, again, maybe not as sexy as it was a week ago, but there are still good games, Christian. Speaking of the SEC, on the road, 11 a.m. on Saturday on ABC. Arkansas on the road, top 20, Oklahoma State. Could get nasty. The Pokes are favored by 7.5 right now. I might just jump on that.
Look
for
that,
entertainment purposes.
Look at the over-under for that, too. Sitting 62.5.
20 points more than the Texas-Michigan score.
That is, it's a gross. And you're going to very quickly see what Arkansas's run defense looks like. Because Oklahoma State's power of offense is take the shotgun snap and feed Ollie Gordon. You talk about Jaquez Hunter might not needing 15 or 20 carries. Well, I mean, even last week against South Dakota State, where Oklahoma State beat South Dakota State 44-20, Ollie Gordon had almost 30 carries in that backfield.
Golly.
That is, I mean,
30 carries.
28 carries for 126 yards and 3 touchdowns.
That's Kerryon Johnson-esque.
That
right
is,
there.
I mean, running somebody into the ground in week one. But again, that shows you that offensive mindset for Oklahoma State. So you're going to very quickly see what that front seven for Arkansas can do on the defensive side of the football.
I don't know, man. I know that Arkansas has some confidence on the offensive side because of Taylen Green, who looked really good in week one, and he's going to make some spectacular plays this season, whether Arkansas is a good team or not. I just don't know if I have the confidence in them week two to go on the road and take down Oklahoma State. How about this game in the ACC? Georgia Tech now inside the top 25 after a 2-0 start on the road at Syracuse. And if Syracuse doesn't get you going all that much, they won 38-22 against the Bobcats of Ohio. But I mentioned this in the preseason. Do you know who their starting quarterback is there in Syracuse, New York?
It's Mr. Kyle McCord from the Ohio State University.
Who looked pretty good in week one, and Ohio State's quarterback did not.
He did not. I found that out playing College Football 25 the other night where I was playing against Syracuse, and I saw McCord run out, and it took me a second to figure it all out. But, yeah, McCord looked very, very good. He was 27 of 39, 354 through the air, 4 TDs, 1 interception. But Haynes King, man, brings such a dual threat and a physicality perception thing or to the side of that Georgia Tech offensive attack. We talked about it throughout all of the preseason, how I personally think that Haynes King is one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC, being this his second year with Georgia Tech following the transfer from Texas A&M. But we saw it against Florida State. I don't think this Georgia Tech team is somebody that's going to go out and put 56 points on the board. But I expect a lot of games similar to the Florida State game to where they just grit and they grind you away and they win a game in the fourth quarter 28-24.
I hope Syracuse fans show out in the Dome. If they do, that could be a really fun, underrated game on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Other games around college football, we'll do some quick hitters here. Baylor in Utah, 2:30 on Fox. That's a really interesting game.
It's nice, too. Sorry to cut you off, but those three games, that's all the 11 o'clock slate. Like, that at least sets up for a pretty solid day.
I agree.
If you aren't going to the Auburn-Cal game, it's a pretty nice way of sitting on the couch and not doing much starting right after college game day.
Yeah, and then in that afternoon slate, you have Baylor-Utah, Iowa State-Iowa, Middle Tennessee and Ole Miss. I don't think it's going to be anything, but just watch out. Ole Miss only favored by 41.5 points, so you never know, right? You never know. So those mid-afternoon games, of course, Auburn and Cal is in that mid-afternoon slate as well. Do we know... Not that any of us are going to watch it on TV because Auburn is going to be on Wings 94.3, but do we know what TV station that's going to be on? It's on ESPN2, Herb. Well,
there we go.
There you go. So that's the afternoon slate, and these are just kind of top 25 games. There are other games happening throughout the morning in that mid-afternoon as well. A lot of teams like A&M and Georgia are getting their cupcake game out of the way since they played bigger games in week one. In the SEC, you've got an SEC versus SEC match. I believe this is the only one happening in week two. South Carolina on the road in Lexington at Kentucky. The Cats favored by 10, 2:30 on Saturday on ABC.
What a game that's going to be. My Old Dominion Monarchs gave South Carolina all they could ask
for. They should have won that game.
They definitely should have. But that is officially like how y'all have claimed Dayton as the basketball team. Old Dominion is the team that I think we need to collectively – that is our second team in college football.
I'm fine with that.
Rain cool. on the Old Dominion Monarchs and – they, again, gave South Carolina and Lenora Sellers everything they wanted inside of Williams-Brice Stadium. I think it blatantly showed the lack of depth that South Carolina has on the offensive line. And for entertainment purposes only, I think Kentucky steamrolls.
Wow. Okay. In the evening game, South Florida in Tuscaloosa taking on Alabama. The Tide favored by 31.5. We all know the storylines from a year ago. I don't see any repeats there, but you never know.
I don't either, and I don't think that it will happen. But if you're wanting a good laugh, go look at the banter on Twitter or on X now with USF fans or USF Barstool. They are going at Alabama.
You may as well. You got nothing to lose.
It is fantastic to look at. I woke up this morning and saw a thread of like 300 messages.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty solid.
Top 25 game happening in North Carolina on ABC Saturday night. Number 14, Tennessee on the road. I don't think this is at NC State. It's at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, but taking on NC State. So basically a road game. Top 25 game. Believe that's the only one on the schedule for this weekend. Colorado, Nebraska, old school rivalry right there. That'll be a lot of fun. Boise State on the road taking on number 7 Oregon, who looked atrocious against Idaho.
Yeah, that could be a little slip up game. Boise State has a really, really good ground attack. I'm going to have to pull up the game against Georgia Southern where they won 56-45, but it was some sort of crazy record. There we go. Ashton Gentry, 20 carries, 267 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Jeez. Average. Alone?
Yes, him. Holy smokes. Not Boise State. Jenty alone.
Oh my
averaged,
gosh.
Averaged 13 and a half a pop.
Good for him. That's crazy. Also, late Saturday night, Texas Tech out in Wazoo taking on Washington State. And in case you forgot, Mississippi State on the road at Arizona State in week two. Yikes. 9:30 kick on ESPN. The Dogs better be ready. That's a late night incoming.
That's, I mean, very similar to Auburn Cal this time last year.
Yeah.
And grab your coffee because you'll need it at kickoff.
And if it's any sort of game like Auburn Cal was a year ago,
just don't watch it.
Yeah, don't watch it. Grab your Red Bull, alcohol, whatever you're into. It'll be a wild night there in Arizona State. But we'll take a break talking that because we're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. When we come back, Kirby Smart and Georgia got off to a nice start in week one. We'll have all the recap coming up for you next.
Are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and we get to the phone lines because this guy joins us every Wednesday at 2:30. He is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. You want Georgia coverage? This guy is the go-to over in Athens, and he joins us every single week here on the show. Jordan, great to hear from you, man. I hate that there's nothing to talk about this week.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. Might have to talk about some of the Olympic sports or something like that. Not much on the gridiron side, but I've got faith in you, Jacob. You can come up with some good questions.
Wow, I really appreciate that. Man, that's really the reason I bring you on is just for the compliments that you give when you join us on the airwaves. Yeah, Georgia soccer gets underway. No, I'm just kidding. It was all Georgia football in week one of college football, and it was one of the biggest named matchups going into week one, and it's crazy because we were talking here in Auburn about how, yes, it was Georgia-Clemson, but there were other games that maybe had a little bit more meaning going into it. But my goodness, coming out of it, there were so many storylines, but on the Clemson side instead of Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, a 31-point win for Georgia, you know, it's a situation where, you know, Clemson, I thought Clemson kind of had a chip on their shoulders going into that game, and they did very little to, you know, squash rumors or feelings that, you know, they're not the, you know, a championship contender like they have been in years past. But from the Georgia side, defense looks outstanding. I mean, to the point that some of us are wondering if this could be Kirby's second best defense behind that 2021 defense, which I don't know if we're ever going to see a defense like that again. But on the offensive side, it took them a little while to get going, but I thought the second half was super impressive. And to me, the biggest thing, if I'm a Georgia fan, what gets me excited, 7 different receivers that Carson hit in the first half, 9 altogether. Just got a lot of depth at wide receiver and really among all their pass catchers. So it was a job well done. There's stuff they can clean up, I think, especially on the offensive side. But I think Georgia feels good about where it is and what they were able to accomplish against what I still think is going to wind up being a pretty good Clemson team.
Well, I think that Clemson defense was really, really good, and they were especially early, and I think they were solid all the way through, Jordan, and you may agree, disagree, you were there covering the game. I think it was a dam that just couldn't hold on any longer because they didn't get any support from the Tiger offense.
Totally agree, and I think I even used that same comparison, saying that it was a dam, and, you know, I feel bad for defenses like that because, I mean, in the first half, Clemson really shut Georgia down, held them to 2 field goals. The run game, I want to say, aside from a Carson Beck scramble, in the first half they averaged like 2.1 yards a carry. I mean, you can't really ask much more from that defense, especially that defensive front, which I think is very, very good. And, yeah, I mean, their offense just never could get anything going. I had a lot of questions going into that game about Cade Klubnik. I just haven't seen anything in the Clemson games I've watched in the past to make me think he's the guy. He's the guy that can put them on a pedestal, help them win the ACC, be a championship contender. I didn't see anything on Saturday that I thought backed that up, that he's capable of that. I thought he looked shaky early. I thought that he missed a few gimmies to start the game and just never really recovered. I mean, it's one of those games, to me, very impressive with Georgia and showed that, you know, they're still going to be number one, at least going forward in the meantime. But with Clemson, you know, they've got to get something figured out on offense because as much success as they've had, what they've been able to do and just the stagnation of this offense is kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Hey, Jordan, Christian Griffin here with Jacob this afternoon. Wanted your thoughts on, I guess, what you were talking about, needing to find a way. Dabo released a quote today regarding the transfer portal saying that we've done it in a unique way. Now people want me to go do it some other way. They've lost their freaking mind. I'm not doing it. How blatant is a quote like that after a performance like a 31-point loss following Georgia, who has used the transfer portal very well? I mean, that's two different directions for college football. Is there any way that Clemson can recover with a mindset like that?
I don't think so. I think it's just being caught in the past. I think that Dabo, you know, and I thought it was really interesting in the lead-up to this game, Kirby Smart was asked about the way that Clemson does not use the portal. And, you know, Kirby basically said, you know, I get what Dabo's doing, and, you know, if I could have it my way, we wouldn't use the portal. But, you know, there's always going to be guys leaving Georgia, guys who want more playing time elsewhere, guys who could be encouraged to leave Georgia and start, you know, in a different spot. You know, you have to go in the portal to fill those things. And the last couple of years, Georgia's done a really good job. You know, 3 years ago, Georgia didn't get anybody out of the portal, and that was a big deal. But even at that point, Kirby said that's not for lack of trying. You know, there were a few guys we wanted. These past 2 years, they've done a very good job of what I would describe as topping off their roster, finding the holes on this team and trying to fill them. And with this team, they went and got three receivers, and two of them caught touchdowns against Clemson. They've gotten help on the defensive line. They've gotten some younger guys among the defensive backs that I think is kind of more of a long-term thing. It's just not going to – if you want to be a championship contender, you cannot not use the transfer portal. And it's something that, you know, it may wind up leading to Dabo going down with the ship because it's just not the way you can do it in college football in 2024.
Jordan, you mentioned the elite play of the defense for Georgia holding Clemson to just 3 points and really no momentum for the Tiger offense. And then on the flip side, the Georgia offense, Carson Beck, 23 of 33, 278 yards, two touchdowns, no turnovers for that Georgia team as well. I ask you this quite often now that we're in the season in a game like this. Are you more impressed with the offensive performance, 34 points, no turnovers, or the defensive effort that shut down Clemson for the entire game?
Definitely the defense, just because we knew that, you know, aside from the questions with Kate Klubnik, I really liked Phil Moffa, the running back. They got some young receivers that people thought would have an opportunity, and to hold them to 3 points, and, you know, those 3 points kind of coming a little bit later in the game, super impressed. Again, it's one of those situations where you look, especially when you look at that pass defense, that was a secondary that not only was replacing three starters from last year, but it was a situation where the starting nickelback did not play on Saturday. Janelle Aguero had been dealing with a soft tissue injury, so he doesn't go. So they put Ja'Cory Thomas out there a little bit. He kind of plays more safety. But bigger than that, they moved Malachi Starks. He kind of split time between safety and star. And Malachi's not spent a whole lot of time playing the star position. They just kind of did it out of necessity on Saturday. And that helped K.J. Bolden get on the field. He played really well. The offense was good. You know, they've got to sustain drives a little bit better in the first half. But I think the talk has to be about this defense. I mean, this does, based off of that game, it looks like it's a defense that can be very, very special this season.
Something we had talked about is we're speaking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. Jordan, something you and I had talked about a week ago going into the game because it was still up in the air was, will ETN play, right? Will the running back who has had some off-field stuff that we all know about, would Kirby Smart play him or not? And he held him out. He did not play, and Georgia still had six guys not named Carson Beck run the football.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation where, you know, you're obviously taking a risk not playing a guy of that talent and understanding that, you know, Clemson, especially against the run, would be really stout. But, you know, I think that they understood that that was the right decision, that Trevor needed to be held out of that game because of his arrest back in March. It happened, and not only did Georgia do okay without him, but you kind of had a coming out party for Nate Frazier, a guy that we heard a lot about during fall camp, a guy that people were really excited about. And he looked the part. He definitely became a fan favorite early on, scores a touchdown and takes a bow. That's a shout out to Todd Gurley, something he used to do. And also did kind of a little jazz hand thing. That's what Tony Michel used to do. So he's been studied up. He knew sort of what he was signing up for becoming a Bulldog. But, you know, Nate's going to be a guy that I think gets a lot of carries going forward. And he's going to be tested here next week when they go to Kentucky playing the first SEC game of the season.
You mentioned Frazier, 11 carries, 83 yards, averaging 7.5 a pop, and he had that touchdown as well. You never want a young guy to be thrown into a situation because of a negative incident, right, with ETN and the arrest. But how does something like that and the next man up mentality for Frazier, where he was ready for game one, how does that impact that Georgia running game throughout the entire length of the season?
I think it gives fans a lot of hope about what that running game can be. And part of it, too, not only with Trevor Etienne being held out, Branson Robinson got the start, but he was a guy that was coming off a patellar tendon tear last August. And, you know, they weren't going to run him a lot, but along with kind of watching his workload, you could kind of tell he was kind of knocking the rust off. So they did sort of need a boost of energy. I thought Nate Frazier brought that. It was funny in the post game. He broke a big play at one point, about a 40-yard run, where he kind of switched directions and headed the other way on the field. And Kirby Smart talked about it after the game and essentially said, you know, he had tried moves like that in practice, and I told him, you know, if you cut back like that, you're going to get laid out. And he said, then he did it today, and I went up to him afterwards and told him, that's okay. You know, you can do it in the game. So he proved himself there. And, again, he's a guy that had gotten a lot of buzz in fall camp, and it took all of one game to show everybody why.
Well, as you look ahead into week two, Jordan, gonna put you on the spot. I need a full 30-minute breakdown on Tennessee Tech. I need to know every side of the ball, every player. What can we expect? I need your best right here. This is a big game for the Dogs this week.
Yeah, well, we need a lot of things, Jacob, but I don't know if I got that one in me other than to say, you know, played MTSU pretty well last week. Derek Mason, a guy folks remember pretty well there at MTSU, and yeah, I think this one's going to be ugly. I'm hoping I can get out of there at a decent time and maybe see some good ball games on Saturday.
Yeah, 1 o'clock on the SEC Network, possibly the SEC Network Plus. I mean, this game is going to be so ugly they don't even have a betting line. Vegas won't even give you a number. So keep that in mind. Georgia, still the number one team in the country as they look to get and go 2-0 against Tennessee Tech this week. And then, Jordan, you did mention this. Looking ahead to next week for Georgia is when they open up SEC play on the road at Kentucky. So very fascinating to have that next week.
Definitely, and it'll be interesting this week to see Kentucky against South Carolina. You know, Kentucky kind of had a weird situation on Saturday with weather. Their game against Southern Miss got pushed back for a while. They played it. I think they got into about the third quarter, and the weather got bad again, and they called it. But there's going to be two Kentucky guys that are going to be fired up, especially for this game, Brock Vandegrift and Jamon Dumas Johnson, two guys that played at Georgia. Brock played pretty well against Southern Miss, and Jamon had an interception. So I think those guys will be excited by the time week three gets here, and they're going to want to prove that they want to get the upper hand on their former teammates.
Well, excited to talk to you about that next week when Georgia will seemingly be 2-0 and about to make that trip to Lexington. But before we let you go this week, there's been some news here in Auburn about the non-conference basketball schedule being finalized. What can you tell us about the Georgia non-conference basketball schedule? As I know it's football season, but the hardwood is right around the corner.
Definitely. And, yeah, Georgia's was finalized a couple of weeks ago. I think they've got the right mix, of high-caliber teams and then games you should be able to win. I mean, the most notable non-conference games, going to the Bahamas to play Marquette, to play St. John's there with Rick Pitino, and hosting Notre Dame in that ACC-SEC Challenge, and then also playing in Holiday Hoops Given. So that'll be fun to watch. They're playing the same day that Auburn is going to be in action down there in Atlanta, Georgia, and Notre Dame. So it's a situation where I think we talked a few weeks ago about how tough Georgia's start to conference play is going to be, and it makes winning a lot of these games imperative. I mean, if they want to have a chance to be in that talk for making the NCAA tournament, they got to have a good run here. I believe Georgia went 10-3 in non-conference play last year. I think that's about what they're going to have to hit if they're going to be in the mix and nationally relevant by the time conference action gets underway.
Yeah, I think you had told us in those first 7 or 8 conference games, if they win 2 or 3 of them, they're doing really, really good, because it is not easy for the Bulldogs to start SEC playing basketball. A fun non-conference schedule for them and Mike White as well. But, of course, football takes precedent over everything right now in early September. Talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every single week here on ESPN 106.7. Always appreciate you and your time, my friend. Tell people where they can find you and all your fantastic coverage.
Appreciate that. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Dogs247 and at Jordan Davis Hill. And yeah, football season is upon us, getting ready for this Tennessee Tech game. I shout out to the photographers. I hope they don't burn up in this afternoon heat, but we'll see if Georgia's able to get some of the younger guys on the field and see what they're able to do right before SEC play gets going.
Jordan, have a great week. Have a good time covering the game this weekend. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Sounds like a plan. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much. That's Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Check them out, dogs247.com. Dogs have their season opener this Saturday, 1 o'clock. Man, that's brutal. 1 o'clock against Tennessee Tech after a huge win over Clemson in week 1. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 1. Take a look at that Auburn basketball non-conference schedule and catapult ourselves into hour number 2. All that coming up here on ESPN Radio.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number 1 here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. It flies by, doesn't it? It's what they say when you're, having fun? Is that what they say? I think so. And we appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us. And lots to talk about in terms of Georgia's win over Clemson. Not so much in terms of previewing their Week 2 matchup. But as he said, I am curious on how Kentucky plays this week when are they on the road at South Carolina, or South Carolina go to Kentucky this week? I had it pulled up a second ago and I forget. Either way, Kentucky plays South Carolina, and then Kentucky will host Georgia in week 3. Kentucky's home against South Carolina. How about that? So they get to host back-to-back SEC games to open up conference play, do the Cats. And so I think, Christian, for this particular instance, for Georgia in particular, yeah, I think the South Carolina game for the Cats is a really big deal.
I would imagine. And again, talking about Brock Vandergrift, who was the backup quarterback at Georgia the past 2 years, transfers over to Kentucky. You get a home game. I mean, that's all that you can ask for against your former team. And as big as that Georgia-Kentucky game is, Georgia can't slip up against Kentucky, because following that, you head to Tuscaloosa.
Ooh, that's right. I forgot that that's right.
Those are back-to-back weeks, and you hear all about you overlook an opponent, which, not saying that Georgia's going to overlook Kentucky, and with all due respect, they probably could.
Yeah, probably.
But it's just one of those games where some crazy things could happen in Lexington. Auburn, or Georgia, seems to keep that game close at least for a little bit. Between them and Missouri, one of those games you feel like every year is one of the games that feel like it's closer than it necessarily should be. But yeah, what a game following that one. So make sure that you're not slipping up on your way to Lexington.
Looking at quickly, the Auburn basketball non-conference schedule was finalized today, was sent out. We've known all the big heavy hitters, right? But Auburn will open up the season November 6th versus Vermont. That'll be inside of Neville Arena. Then they'll play Houston out in Houston. They'll come back and play against Kent State. That is on November 13th. Again, this is for Bruce Pearl and Auburn basketball. And then they'll play UNA, North Alabama. They'll play them on November 18th. That is inside of Neville Arena. Before they head out to Maui, where they'll open up with Iowa State and play a handful of teams down there as well. Then you have the ACC-SEC Challenge. Remember, that is now early December rather than that being played in late January as it used to be with the SEC-Big 12 Challenge. Auburn will be at Duke on December 4th. They'll come home and play Richmond on December 8th. That's a sneaky good game. That's a Richmond program that makes the NCAA tournament quite a few times in a basketball season. So then they'll go to Atlanta. They'll play in the Holiday Hoopsgiving. You heard Jordan Hill mention that a little bit ago. Tigers taking on the Buckeyes of Ohio State. That's December 14th. Come home to play Georgia State on the 17th. Play Purdue in Birmingham on the 21st. Monmouth will come to town. That's also an NCAA tournament program that'll make it there every now and then. That's on December 30th inside of Neville Arena before the Tigers open up with the Tigers of Missouri on January 4th.
Auburn basketball just released the quote from Bruce Pearl. It says, quote, "This is by far the toughest schedule in Auburn basketball history and probably in my 29 years of being a head coach." And somebody like Coach Pearl wouldn't take that lightly, but at the same time, I don't think too many people would disagree with that statement.
Nope. And I continue to say, as many people have, I think it's a silent testament to how good this team is and how good they could be, and Bruce Pearl's putting under the test.
It definitely is. You talk about the talent of this team that they've brought in and the talent that has come back. It's speaking to how it's deserved, but it's also needed. You gotta have those early season tests before you finish up and before you even get to the SEC conference play.
Hour number one in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll talk some Auburn and Cal. Flip the page towards that before Double D will join us. Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn. He'll be with us to recap week one and preview week two. That's all coming up in hour number two here on ESPN 106.7.
Following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You know where to find it, ESPNAU.com. You'll find it there. The whole show will be posted after we're done today. And in that first hour, we started looking around college football in week two of the season with some really fun games, I think. Maybe not as big as week one, but I think you're going to have some fun games this weekend. So we started looking ahead to that. And we also had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us as well. He joined us in the first hour talking all things Georgia football as they took care of business against Clemson in week one. Did more than that. They dominated the Tigers in week one. And so that was in the first hour. Here in hour number two, going to talk quickly about Auburn and Cal, get a quick preview in of that as we get started. And then it's Double D Wednesday. Double D Daryl Dappert will be with us from Locked On Auburn. He will be dapping it up on this Wednesday. He'll join us in about 10 or 15 minutes. So phone lines are open. If you want to get in on the show before he joins us, you can. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot me a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Any questions for Daryl? If you want to get something to him, you can text us there, 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, want to remind you that our number number two each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Couple of other housekeeping things before we move on. Another reminder, we'll keep reminding you today and tomorrow, the fact that Lee Scott Academy football, their game on Friday against Childersburg has been moved. They will now be playing tomorrow on Thursday night, still on the road, still at Childersburg, still beginning pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 on AU100. Christian Griffin, Rhett Chrome will be on the air, but that game has moved to tomorrow just because of the threat of rain on Friday. And in regards to Auburn and Opelika, that game is still happening Friday. Nothing has changed there. No changes on that. Auburn Opelika still happening Friday night at Duck Sanford Stadium. You can go and check it out. It is probably going to be raining. And just in case you were still wanting to buy those last-minute tickets, just got an update from the athletic director over at Auburn High School, Mr. Dan Norton. Tickets are sold out. There are no more. No tickets are available. They will not sell tickets at the door. If you didn't get your tickets now, sorry. Auburn Opelika sold out. Even though it's going to be pouring rain Friday night, tickets are no longer available. So if you can't get in, tune in on Wings 94.3 and WingsFM.com.
You're shutting down the city on Friday and then shutting it down again on Saturday.
Yes.
You sold out Jordan-Hare Stadium as well, they announced today.
Yeah,
so, I mean, what two events inside of Auburn, Alabama, back to back nights.
Telling you, it's gonna be wild. And hey, while we're doing, while we're just making announcements and checking things off the list, in case you missed it, we announced that this Friday we will be live on location at the Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge. And yes, it is raining. We're normally on the Plaza Patio, but we'll be inside this time just because of the weather and everything. But there's plenty of room in there, so come and hang out with us on the line and the drive. We'll be out there from 2 to 6, brought to you by Sensa Green Heating and Air. So be sure you go and check it out. Come hang out with us for a little bit. I'll be there for our show, but then I got to dip out, get over to the Duck to call some football. But Bill and Dan will be there, and then there's normally some people that hang out afterwards as well. So I have that for you on Friday. ESPN 106.7 live on location. We have a lot of fun when we go out of the studio, so come check and hang out with us on Friday at the Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge. Double D coming up in just a few minutes. Christian, I know you'll most likely dip out once Double D gets on, but your thoughts as we just start to look at Auburn and Cal this weekend. Some people seem very confident. Others are kind of concerned with a weary take on all of this.
Yeah, and granted how everything went down this past year, how can you not throw up some question marks and not necessarily hammer the Auburn line or whatever? I think it's jumped up to 13.5 now, which I think it started either right at 10 or at 12, somewhere around that margin, but
it's moved up regardless.
It has, and even for entertainment purposes, I second guess and hesitate to do anything with that. That being said, Auburn should find a way to win and then be in decent enough fashion where you'd feel like 13.5 or two touchdowns is it should be the expectation. I mean, looking at there should be zero comparison to last year, especially from the standpoint that Cal brought two quarterbacks into the game with him. Ben Finley was the starter, realized that the drop back pocket passer was not necessarily who was going to give them the best chance of a win. So they brought in a guy, his name was Sam Jackson. I don't know if you've heard the name. He caught a touchdown pass for Auburn last weekend. So
he caught a touchdown pass.
Yeah, did not throw it. Caught a touchdown pass for Auburn. I know he's been a highlighted person this week. They were interviewing him with a lot of questions about, you know, the game last year, the game this year. He talked about how well Auburn fans traveled last year, how there was a lot more orange than what he was expecting. They asked him, hey, do you think Cal will do the same thing? And he kind of laughed and just said,
no, I don't think so. And which, it's probably true.
Which we talked about it, though. Again, it's a trip that we hope Cal fans do come to because
yeah,
that's a very fun trip.
Yeah.
The Auburn fans that I talked to that made the trip, they loved it. And so you'd hope to return the favor for all the Berkeley fans that are coming in. But
right.
a 2:30 kickoff, you're going to feel a little bit of the heat again with Berkeley being in the 60s these past couple of weeks. Even with a, we're sitting here celebrating that it's going to be low to mid 80s. That's going to be a big time difference for the Bears.
Isn't it wild, though, as we flip and start looking at game week again for Auburn in week two against Cal? Preseason, right? All summer long, and you are one to speak on this more than most, how big this Cal game is in the schedule.
Yes.
How if you lose this, everything is thrown off and everything just comes to a staggering halt, right? And so many people were, Auburn's just got to find a way to win. Get the win, move on, don't mess around, go in, handle business. You've called it the most important game on Auburn's schedule this year. But after 170-point win, everybody's like, oh, we got it. Auburn's going to handle business. We should win by two or three scores. Auburn's going to throw the football. If the rain holds off, Auburn can put up 50. I mean, that's been the mindset change in the last 72 hours or so since Auburn got done on Saturday night putting up 73 points.
Which, again, is a good thing to have, but Auburn fans are feeling relatively good after a 59-14 win over UMass in week one before heading to Cal. And so, again, as you mentioned, this is what has been marked for ever since the season came out. This is, in my opinion, the most important game of the season for Auburn. And it's not necessarily for so that way they can get their 7 or 8 wins. It's not necessarily so that way you keep momentum rolling as you are nearing SEC play. All of those things are important, and yes, they matter. But from the standpoint of players buying in and the fan base buying in, you have to take care of business and look relatively good doing it, because again, you throw in last year and how ugly that game was that you were fortunate enough to walk away with a 14-10 victory at about 2:30 in the morning Central Time. Just an absolutely disgusting game, and you've now seen the revamped roster, the coaching staff, and everything, yes, is going in the right direction. This is the most important game. This is the biggest building block that Auburn has to take care of, so that way your season still lies in front of you. Because, thinking even just like a Florida State, Georgia Tech game to where everything derailed after something like that. And yes, that was a big conference game, but just something early in the season where Auburn fans have the expectation, you have to go out and at least halfway meet those expectations. Otherwise, the question marks that have been thrown out since this time last year, you're going to start seeing them resurface, and it's going to become a big-time problem.
For me, before we get to break, is I want to see Auburn go into a game against a Power 4 team that they're favored against, that you're supposed to beat, and just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Right? I mean,
simple
just
game.
Go in and, yeah, simple game, right? It's so easy.
You're supposed to win. Just win.
Just, yeah.
Just
come
Nike.
On.
Just
come
do
on,
it.
Coach. Just win, man. I know it's easy. I know there ain't no stress. There's nothing going on. There's no pressure. You don't have to, you know, there's nothing to it but to do it, right? My dad says it all the time. In seriousness, I do want that to be the case, because we're not going to look back and say in 10 years and say, man, remember when Auburn beat Cal? That was awesome. That was great. The program turned right there. No, but this is what big programs do. Alabama expects to do that this weekend against South Florida. Don't you expect that? They expect to win that game by 40, but yes, they're favored by. I'd like to see Auburn do that type of stuff against teams like Cal in years to come, and you have a chance to do that this Saturday.
I think going off of what you said, in 10 years from now, you're not going to look at the Cal game and say, yes, we beat Cal at home by 24 points, and that really just amped up the offense and amped up the season, amped up the recruiting class and everything. But I think on the flip side, I think if you go in there and say, man, Cal found a way to beat us at home when everything was going in the right direction, I think you could start to see that game as a possible, almost like a Florida, where you see the downfall begin to happen. And that's why, again, it just has to be such an important game that you feel like you just have to take care of business. Again, simple game. You got to find a way to do it.
You get no credit for winning, but you get all the blame for losing.
That's all it
what
is.
Happens with this one in particular.
Yeah.
So we have more to talk about that throughout today's show. And as we get closer to Saturday, got to get to a break because Daryl Dappertz joins us when we come back. Christian, appreciate you being with us, my man. I know you were up here, so it just kind of worked out. Appreciate you being in the studio.
Of course. We'll see everybody Friday. But until then, make sure to tune in to AU 100 tomorrow night as Lee Scott takes on Childersburg. Myself and Rhett Crome will have the call starting at 6:30 pregame, kickoff at 7 on the home of Lee Scott Football, AU 100.
We'll be right back. Daryl Dappertz joins us after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's that time. It's that time. Double D Wednesdays as Daryl Dappertz joins us from Locked On Auburn. We get him for 30 minutes a week. Can you believe it? I can't, but we still have so much fun every time he joins us. Double D, Daryl, how are you, my man?
Man, I'm doing well. Getting excited again for once you get a taste of football Saturday, and now we get to go round two here. It's pretty good stuff.
Oh, man, I had a taste on Saturday of some rye bread and some pretzels and some Chick-fil-A and some Cherry Coke. I had a little bit of everything in the press box Saturday.
Yeah, my go-to was water because I thought I was going to have to get a defibrillator. So by the time I got up to the press box, it was so stinking hot for a while there. And I decided just to walk the campus, walk from parking to the stadium. I love taking it all in, and it was brutal Saturday. So supposedly not going to be that way this Saturday. It's supposed to be very pleasant. But, yeah, water was my go-to drink. I haven't drank that much water in a very long time.
I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of you. And
yeah.
You know, you did it to yourself walking. And look, I'm the same way because where we park for the media parking, we get to walk all the way down through, you know, where they do Tiger Walk and past the baseball field and up around the stadium. I mean, it's a really fun walk on game day. But, man, when it's that hot, I can't do it. And hopefully this week isn't going to be as bad. And hopefully the rain holds off too.
Yeah, what it does is it just kind of gives you the environment and the aura and the atmosphere. And look, you know, not sounding too hokey, college football is so much more, especially Auburn football, is so much more than just what takes place between the lines. There is that pageantry. There is that anticipation, that camaraderie, that buildup. And I really get immersed in it that 15 minutes. I get my head screwed on right. I get pumped. I'll get ready to go before I get to the field, then up to the press box. So that 15, and sometimes, honestly, it's just fun interacting with the fans, some of which, you know, are Locked On Auburn listeners, or some of which I know, people that I've known over the years. So it's fun to kind of just interact, and it gets me in the right frame of mind. Saturday, it got me in the right frame of mind is like somebody that knows me or has come up to me and says they enjoy the show is going to watch Double D fall over right here on the pavement. They're going to have the scoop. And I was like, just, it was brutal. But I got up to the press box. I got hydrated. The air condition felt great. We were ready to roll. And it was just a really great, you know, day from start to finish.
Well, that's where we head is the performance for Auburn on the field in game one. 70-point victory for Hugh Freeze and the Tigers in game one, and a game that was never close. Auburn scored the first two times in about a minute, it seemed, and they threw it all over the yard, Daryl. Something that we were talking about a week ago on this show was what was the ratio going to be? What was the game plan going to be in week one? It was very obvious, man. They were throwing the football.
I was shocked. I thought they would kind of come out and kind of, you know, just feel it out a little bit and run it a little bit just to see what Alabama A&M did as far as resistance. And I had no idea they were going to come out in five wides and throw it. I mean, the first possession, they threw it four times. And then on the fifth time when they ran it, touchdown. second possession, I think it was the first play from scrimmage, touchdown. I will say this, the first three possessions that Auburn had that they scored touchdowns on, the first three times they had the ball, the average time of possession was 22 seconds. And, I mean, it's just, like, unreal.
That's unheard of.
And I get it. I know what the opponent is. I know what people are going to say. I am not overreacting. I am pumping the brakes. But I have seen Auburn play Akron, Alabama State, Samford, UMass. I've seen him play a lot of overmatched opponents in the last 5 years, and it did not look like that, period. But the fact that they went five wide and started throwing it all over the yard, and the route tree looked so different, and the separation looked so different, gave me hope that this passing game is refined, it is improved, and against stronger opponents will still be effective.
And it was no secret that they were not only going to throw it a lot, but they were going to throw it to a lot of guys, right, Darrell? I mean, all it seemed like everybody got involved in terms of the freshmen and transfers and returning.
Pass? I thought you caught a, I thought I saw you catch a pass.
I dropped it. Yeah, it hit me in the fingertips. I dropped it. I didn't make the two deep there, so that's why I was playing in the fourth quarter in that type of game. But in it seemed like just about everybody did get involved one way or the other.
Well, here's the thing. Why I am so encouraged, and again, I'm trying to temper my enthusiasm, but why I am so encouraged and so giddy about seeing this passing game progress is I think we had some known commodities that we felt like Auburn was going to have in the passing game as far as the receiving core. I think we knew we had Cam Coleman, knew we had in KLS. What they had in Fairweather, Burton to a certain extent. Could Perry Thompson emerge and get some big plays? I think all those were kind of like factors that people were really anticipating. The Malcolm Simmons aspect of this receiving core and how he looked on Saturday really intrigues me because, you know, it takes this room from three or four guys to five that can score from anywhere on the field. And if you start to, like, we were talking about what is Cal going to do defensively Saturday when they're in a pass defense alignment? Are they going to, you know, Fairweather ate them alive last year. So are they going to say, oh, we can't let Fairweather do what he did against us last year. We're going to bring a safety on him instead of a linebacker. When you do that, you're taking a safety away from over-the-top protection. Mm-hmm. You're leaving somebody one-on-one. Who is that going to be? KLS, Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons, Sam Jackson. The play he made in the end zone was elite. I don't care who you're playing. To make that kind of adjustment in the air on that ball that Hank Brown threw is – you know, that's special. So what are you going to do? I mean, Robert Lewis, we didn't even get to see him really show out, and we know he can. It's going to be very interesting to see. That's why I felt like if the weather was going to be 93 degrees and very humid, and Auburn's running six or seven stud receivers out there at your secondary. But I just still think from a standpoint of weapons, it's going to be very difficult to who you pick to shade or to overplay. And that's what's got me really, really excited.
I still believe, and I've been screaming this as loud as I can for a while now, Malcolm Simmons is the sleeping giant in that room just because, yes, he is. He's got good size. He's not Cam Coleman size, but he's still decent size. But he's just quick as lightning, Darrell. And I think that it's not just going to be a pitch and catch to him down the field, but bringing him in motion or giving it to him straight up or doing whatever the case may be, the game plan is simple. Get him the ball and get out of the way.
He's an instinctive wide receiver. And I'll tell you, on that cut, that jump cut he made where he caught the ball in the middle of the field,
yes,
on his touchdown and reversed field and had the presence of mind to know to just plant and go the opposite direction. I saw him last year in high school. I was at a Wetumpka game. I live in the Wetumpka area. Nobody come egg my house now that I said that. So I live in the Wetumpka area, and I went to the Benjamin Russell Wetumpka game last year. And I kept telling, I was with my son-in-law, and I kept saying, I don't know why this dude's not getting more height. I mean, he just looked like a man amongst boys. And Wetumpka's head coach played football at Troy and said, that dude right there is going to be something in college. People are sleeping on him. Four stars, that's great. I mean, he's still got some recognition. But he runs very refined routes. He's very intuitive and instinctive. You know, we talked about Perry Thompson last year was just such a physical specimen. He out-physicaled people in high school. He could run over you. He could run by you. I think Malcolm Simmons had to, you know, look at his route running and how, I'm telling you, jet sweeps, slants, the things, when they had him out in the open field on that little, one of my favorite pass plays that is just like taking candy from a baby is when you do the play action and then you roll the quarterback and you run a receiver underneath. Yep. It always seems to be open. I don't care who you run it against. It's like 8 to 10 yards downfield. And then you hope that your receiver makes somebody miss after they catch it. He will catch it in space and make somebody miss. And so we'll see what Cal – I was watching Cal's defensive coordinator in a little Zoom call, a little press conference, and he said, look, whatever happened last year, throw it out. This passing game and this Peyton Thorne is different than last year. Now, you know, we talked about that. Me and you did. What is Cal going to do? Are they going to stop the run Saturday? Are they going to say, we're not going to let Hunter, who they really haven't seen at his best yet because he was coming off that one game suspension last year, are they going to let him, are they going to take him away? Because if you do and you dare Auburn to throw this year, there could be some fireworks. It's going to be interesting to see what they do as far as game plan and what they're going to try to take away Saturday.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And that's where we're going to go next is what does Cal do coming Saturday against Auburn? And more importantly, what does Auburn do differently against Cal to try to forget about last year and the ugliness that was that game in Berkeley? We're talking with Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn. He's with us every Wednesday. We're through one segment. We've got a whole nother one coming up. Stick around. More Auburn football talk after this.
The line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and as we are every Wednesday, we're through one segment, but we got another one. We're joined by Double D, Daryl Daprich. You can catch him on the Locked on Auburn podcast. Couple of days a week, Daryl. I'm sure it's been very busy on the podcast side of things.
It has. I mean, it's been wonderful. We did, you know, we do our normal Wednesday, Friday shows, and then there's a reaction show that drops Sunday morning that we tape a record Saturday after the game. And then we did actually a little pregame Saturday from a tailgate spot where we kind of highlighted some of the recruits that were on campus. So it's been fun, and there's just so much to talk about. This time of year, even when, you know, you got a visitor list like Auburn had last Saturday, it was nice to kind of just throw out a little pregame sneak peek deal. But yeah, it was just a lot to discuss and a lot to talk about and a lot of fun topics. It's what we've been waiting for the last 3 or 4 months when things kind of seemed to get slow. We talked about how when SEC Media Days rolled around, you're like, it's not long now. It won't be long now. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but it's just I blinked. And SEC Media Days, we went from there to opening day. So that really seemed even more this year about how quick that turns around.
and it helped that Auburn opened up with a nice performance in week one. There were about a million recruits on campus this weekend, and some of the biggest that Auburn is still going after in the 2025 class. And I think all of that went well, as far as we know, and some things you hear on the back end. I mean, things went well this weekend, and Auburn has four more chances to do that with the next four home games inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. And one of those is this weekend, Darryl, as we turn the page this week over to Cal. And look, there's been millions of references on what last year was, on what the difference on the Cal team was, what the difference in the Auburn team is, traveling through the time difference, yada, yada, yada. Not a night game, not in Berkeley. Afternoon in Auburn, it's the Tigers and the Golden Bears. What are your expectations for what Cal could bring offensively and defensively this Saturday?
Well, you know, they've got a redshirt sophomore quarterback that we did not see last year, Sam Jackson, and then a true freshman played last year. So, kind of an unknown factor there. I think the biggest thing to look at is the Jaden Ott story. And here's a guy that I think single-handedly helped keep Cal in that football game last year. He got dinged up against UC Davis. He got hurt. He left the game in the second half. And is it an ankle? Is it a knee? He's listed as probable. Doesn't mean anything until Friday when the SEC has to report. I will say this. If he's not completely healthy and they throw him into the game, which is a non-conference game, game two, it would be very interesting because I think against this Auburn defense, who's very aggressive, that showed me that they're better tackling team this year than last year. Immense speed sideline to sideline as far as ball hawking and that kind of thing. I don't think you want to throw him into this Auburn defense at 60 or 70%. And you know how ankles are. He's also a little bit suspect in pass pro. And so if he's back there to protect the quarterback and you're doing that on a weak ankle or less than stellar ankle and you can't plant and get that leverage, so I think that Auburn's game plan and what Auburn's going to look at is, all right, watching him closely in warmups. Is he favoring that? Is he limping at all? Because that will at that point, they're going to just say, you know, we'll give you the run. We're going to try to take away this quarterback who didn't play all that particularly great against UC Davis. So I think that's from a defensive standpoint. I don't think Auburn showed a lot at all. Didn't have to last Saturday. I think you'll see some exotic different looks and some blitz packages. Maybe Isaiah Rakes plays. He got held out last Saturday, run stopper in the middle. But if Cal does not have Ott as an option, I just don't see how they're going to be successful offensively unless, you know, I'm seeing something, I'm missing something from this quarterback.
I'm with you on that. And I think it brings up a very interesting point of if you're Cal, right, and let's say just for what if situation here, if Jaden Ott is not 100%, if he's 70, 75, whatever the case may be, yes, this is a big game, and yes, it's important because it's a non-conference game on the road. You could represent the ACC if you're Cal, but it's also not an ACC game. And so, I mean, maybe they do make the decision. It's like, look, it's not worth it to have our running back possibly get injured more for the rest of the season in a game that's non-conference.
Well, and I learned my lesson. This is a game that Auburn should win regardless if Ott plays or not. And I think last year I got caught up in the whole Pavia thing where no one thought he was going to play for New Mexico State, and then we know what happened. He came out and played and what he did to Auburn's defense.
That's a good point,
so I think
yeah.
This is a game that, like last year, Auburn beat Cal on the road with Ott playing. So it shouldn't matter. I just think from a Cal perspective, it's going to make it a lot more difficult because if Auburn can pin its ears back and not respect the run or the draw game at all and just come at a redshirt sophomore quarterback, McLeod, Crawford, Falk, start bringing people from the edges, Riddick, Amaris Williams, some of these guys that are looking to have big games from the outside pass rush, that's what you need to see. I mean, Auburn only had two sacks. They collapsed the pocket a little bit. I think they probably would have liked to see more, four or five sacks maybe against an FCS opponent. But how does that – is that because they just didn't show much? How's that going to look like? You know, what's that going to look like with Durkin on Saturday? Ott keeps them honest. You know, he's a guy that's capable of going for 150. I don't know against Auburn if he's capable of doing that, but he's a very, very good running back. And so his health is going to solely depend – it's going to depend on how Auburn schemes and what they do against Cal. We'll know early. I mean, we'll know with the yes. From the formations from up there and alignments. But I think it's going to be troubling for Cal if they don't feel like they have at least a semblance of a running game to keep Auburn honest.
What I'm looking at, Darryl, is on the opposite side, on Auburn's running game, an aspect of the offense that we didn't see a whole lot of. Yes, Jarquez Hunter had the big explosive run to score a diving touchdown early in the game, but Auburn aired it out a ton. They threw the football time and time again. There seems to be, and we've talked about it here on ESPN, how there's a confidence that Auburn can run the ball, but through one game and against an FCS opponent, we don't fully know. Are you expecting to see more of maybe lean on the run, throw when you have to, or does Auburn come out slinging it again?
Wow, that's a million-dollar question. I think it's, what Cal, it depends on. Sometimes you go into a game, you have a game plan, and you say, this is what we're going to do. Let's make the other team stop us. I think Auburn's, Nix and Hugh Freeze and Ken Austin are going to try to get a feel for what Cal is going to try to do. If Cal says, look, we're true believers. We think that Auburn can throw it now. We're not going to load up the box. Then Auburn will run it and run it down their throat. If they say, I don't believe that. I think it was against an FCS opponent. Auburn's going to have to prove it to me that they've improved offensively, regardless of what their defensive coordinator said through the passing game. And they load the box, and Auburn goes five wide. Then, good luck with that too. If you're Cal, that's the thing about having a threat now. And I suspect they are going to early, with Wilcox being such a fundamentally sound defensive coach, defensive-minded coach, was a defensive coordinator. I think the first thing they're going to do is they're going to think Auburn's going to try to set the tone with running the football and then try to go play action off that. So I think that Cal will sell out to stop the run. The minute Auburn sees that, that's the difference with Hugh Freeze calling plays and Derek Nix calling plays and the route tree. The minute Auburn sees that, they better adjust and go five wide and say, okay, we're throwing it all over the yard today. Get ready. And we'll have fair weather. We'll have our wides. And, oh, by the way, in the second possession or the play two of this series of downs, now we're running in three new fresh wide receivers. That's what I'll have to do. I think Auburn will come out and try to establish some sort of semblance of a running game because they never saw the Jarquez Hunter that other people saw that he's capable of, Cal didn't. So with Cobb and with Austin and this offensive line that they feel really good about, Jeremiah Wright just was a road grader when they did run the ball. I mean, when they ran the ball, he was hitting people and driving them 3, 4, 5 yards back.
Yes.
Now that's the FCS defensive front. We'll see what they do against, because Cal's got Carlton and Reese and McCullough and a couple other guys that are pretty good defensive players, but they're good from either a pass rush standpoint or stopping the run. If they don't know which is coming, I think it lessens their effectiveness a little bit.
Which plays right into what Auburn has wanting to do and what Hugh Freeze has been telling us he wants Peyton Thorne to do time and time again is be a master in the RPO, right? I mean, that's what he has wanted Peyton Thorne to do. He's all the different quotes, I've given him the pieces, I expect him to do this, I expect him to know when to get out of this and change this. Like, that should play right into Auburn's offensive game plan, right, Darryl? If Cal is always on their toes and they don't know what's coming and Auburn can keep them getting guessing time and time again for a defense that, even dating back to last year, Hugh Freeze has had a lot of respect for.
He does. I mean, and again, that stops and starts with Justin Wilcox. I mean, this is a defensive-minded coach that's got a very high IQ from a defensive acumen standpoint. That's why I think there were two factors as to why Cal kept Auburn as low scoring as they did last year. One was Auburn, and a lot of the self, I mean, they fumbled, I think, the very first possession. I think there was a lot of self-inflicting wounds. I remember that game being a lot of drops. Hunter was not the Hunter we knew later on in the year. That aspect of it was there. Auburn did some things to stop Auburn. But then again, Cal looked good defensively. I have a hard time wrapping my head around a defense that gave up 221 passing yards to UC Davis. Well, what are they going to do when it's Auburn? You would think that if they gave up 220 against UC Davis, that Auburn could go for 250, 275. Auburn does that, if Peyton Thorne throws for 250 yards Saturday, and Auburn just has an average rushing game of about 150 yards, well, then watch out, because you're not. It's going to be balanced, and you're not going to be able to understand or know where it's coming from. And I want to see Auburn turn Cal over some too. If you said one thing that I took away from that game that I was a little bit disappointed, if there could be any twinge of that at 73-3, is I didn't see Auburn do what they needed to do, turning the ball over for an overmatched Alabama A&M team. Auburn did not create turnovers.
And they turned it over twice themselves.
Didn't get an interception, didn't have a fumble, didn't have a strip sack. So I think Auburn, you know, that turnover margin needs to go to the other side of the ledger Saturday. And if Auburn can do that and be up, you know, plus one, plus two on the turnover margin, give themselves a short field, then, yeah, I mean, I think it could be over fairly comfortably, you know, not a blowout, but it could be one of those games where you feel like it's always kind of in hand, that there's really no – Auburn doesn't feel like they're in danger of losing if they can have a couple of those things go their way.
Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn. He's with us on ESPN 106.7 during On the Line every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45. I guess 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish is typically what it is. And Daryl, before we let you get out of here, Auburn basketball finalized their non-conference schedule. We've known the big ones, right? The Houstons, the Purdues, the Dukes of the world. But a couple of interesting ones in there as well. Georgia State, Richmond. I mean, there's some nice games in there to fill in between the big dogs.
Vermont, Kent State. I mean, you know, Vermont was in the tournament last year, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, so you got Kent State, who, you know, again, Richmond is a team that longtime Auburn basketball fans gives PTSD. Charles Barkley's last year when they got to the tournament, they got upset by the Richmond Spiders in the first round. I think Auburn's played them since then, though, a couple times and have just absolutely spanked them. But, yeah, Monmouth, you know, is a team that is had some – there really doesn't just seem like a team that you should go in and go, okay, Auburn should beat them 40, like there was last year. But still, when you look at what the rest of the non-conference schedule looks like, playing teams like that should give Auburn some confidence. Not saying they're going to be cakewalks. They should be, only based upon how I feel like how deep and talented. I had the opportunity to hear Bruce Pearl speak at an event last night, a gala in Montgomery, and it was very, very inspiring. It was a great – he talked – Lauren Sisler from ESPN was the MC. He talked about this upcoming year, and one of the things he said that resonated with me last night was he said, are we going to be the team that lost to Yale in the first round, or are we going to be the team that won an SEC title and a tournament title? How we work right now in the offseason will dictate that. And he's very high on this team. He's very, very high on this team. He made the point to say, we could be a top 20 team when the season starts, but that would be good enough to be seventh in the SEC.
Isn't that
crazy? Said, understand what lies in front of us. But he feels, I had an opportunity off to the side a little bit, chat. He feels really, really, really good about this roster. And that's why he felt comfortable in this kind of schedule.
And he said that this is, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, he said this is the toughest schedule he's ever had as a head coach in college basketball. And I think he did that for a reason. And it's because he believes in this team, Daryl. And it's because he's confident in what he has coming back to the Plains with returnees and freshmen and transfer portal. I mean, this could be the most talented team he's ever had in all of his years of coaching as well. Double D, Daryl Dapperts, he's with us every Wednesday. It's so many people's favorite segment, my man. I get constant texts and compliments on you and the great work you do with us when you're here with us every week and all your stuff that you do with Locked On Auburn and your written work as well. You keep crushing the game, my man, and we're just so appreciative of you and your time.
Well, thank you for having me on. Very kind words. I love it. Look forward to this visit. And, you know, have a great week, and I will see you Saturday.
Yes, sir. I'll see you Saturday in the press box. That is Double D, Daryl Dapperts. Check him out at Dap. You can check him out on X on social media. He's very active on there. He loves to get people fired up on social media. He's very good at it. He's good with he's good for a Dap rant every now and then, too. And you can catch him a couple of days a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap it all up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Double D, man. It is always a blast to have him on Wednesdays. Daryl Dapperts with us from Locked On Auburn. He's got some written work going out as well. I know he's part of the Barn now. There's a podcast. They've got a message board. They got all sorts of stuff going on over there. So go check him out. Daryl Dapperts, one of the best in the game, and we appreciate him being with us every single Wednesday. Also, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 was with us in hour number one as well. Got all of the latest information on the Georgia Bulldogs after their demolishing of Clemson in week one. And they prepare for a juggernaut week two, Tennessee Tech. Yeah, we didn't talk much about that game. We did a lot of recapping from week one of Georgia's win over Clemson. So all of that was in the show today. Plus, Christian Griffin was with me for a while. He was with me the first hour, and then the first segment of the second hour, he was hanging around the studio because Lee Scott Academy football had their game moved from Friday night to tomorrow night, Thursday. Yes, Lee Scott and Childersburg, first game in the region for the Warriors in AHSAA Class 3A. They'll be on the road taking on the Tigers of Childersburg. Pregame 6:30 with kickoff at 7. That's on the road. Heading up 280, they'll be up there tomorrow night on AU100. That's 100.3 FM on your radio dial, AU100FM.com, or the Radio Alabama app. So be sure that you check that out with Christian Griffin. Rhett Chrome will be sure to have Bill and Dan remind the people a few times, and we'll remind you again tomorrow as well. All of that is because of the weather that is moving in on Friday. Childersburg wanted to have the game moved from Friday to Thursday, so that's what they're going to do. So they'll play tomorrow night. Auburn and Opelika, that game remains on Friday, okay? That game is still Friday at the Duck. Pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 with me. Rob Pate is back in the booth this week. Jack Cudden will be with us as well. That's on the Auburn High Sports Network, Wings 94.3, WingsFM.com, and the Radio Alabama app. And also want to let you know, this is from Auburn High School directly, tickets are sold out, okay? No more tickets are available for the Auburn High Opelika game. Tickets are not sold at the door, so if you don't have one now, sorry, you ain't getting one. It is what it is. That's how that thing goes. I'm surprised it lasted this long for Auburn and Opelika. So if you are not able to go to the game, the best way to take it in, listen on the radio, Wings 94.3 and WingsFM.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Thursdays are crazy around here, man. We're going to have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll get some recap on week one from Auburn football and how the broadcast went for the Auburn Sports Network and dive into what happened on Tiger Talk on Monday. We'll also be joined by Auburn High School's head football coach, Keith Etheridge. He's with us at 3 o'clock on Thursdays to kick off the second hour, talking about the big win over Vestavia and get his thoughts on the Bulldogs of Opelika. And then Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC, he'll be with us in hour number two tomorrow. And then Free For All Friday, it's me, Uncle T-Bone, out live at the Plaza Bar and Lounge. The Drive will be on location as well. So both shows, On the Line and The Drive, live on location at Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge. 2 to 6 on Friday, probably inside with the rain, all right? So no plaza patio, but we'll be inside regardless, so come hang out with us live on location on Friday afternoon. All right, that's going to do it. Got to get out of here. The Drive coming up next. Bill and Dan from 4 till 6. And again, want to remind you the second hour of my show, 3 to 4, brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. Check them out online at theorthoclinic.com. Back tomorrow for a jam-packed show, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.